Clare Means Business, a Clare FM exclusive podcast with Josh Prenderville.
You're very welcome once again to Clare Means Business. I hope you're keeping well. It's been a week really of winners and losers, as is traditional when the government's annual unveiling of the budget comes around, and that's been the case once again in Budget 2022. Too many sectors to mention here, many of which we've covered in detail though here on Clare FM. Though one detail I'm sure will be of significance to many employers here is the extension of the EWSS scheme into April of next year. We have an interesting agenda to get through once again here on the podcast. Later we'll be chatting about remote working, which of course has been given a significant tax break in that budget, as well as delving deeper into the possibility of a four-day working week. For now though, I want to chat to yet another award winner in the business world who is flying the flag well for the banner. Ballinacallie native Sandra Murphy is a fashion and textile designer with a passion for sustainability, and last month she won a MODOS Circular Economy Innovation Award. I'm delighted to say Sandra is with me on the podcast. Thanks for your time, Sandra. And can I ask firstly then about your interest in sustainable fashion in particular and where it stemmed from, as you've got 20 years experience put down behind you in the industry?
I've worked myself in the industry for about 20 years now, and my interest in fashion comes right from where I'm speaking to you at the moment, which is my home here in Ballinacallie. There's kind of a family heritage here in fashion and textiles and clothing. I'd come from, as a lot of people would, a lineage of home sewers and people who made their own clothes. And my mother, she would have worked in garment manufacturing as well, when that was kind of a thing back in the 70s, when we even had some manufacturers here in Clare. And then my dad and my mum met, and they opened a menswear business together. And that was in the town in Innes for a long time, and that was JJ's Fashions, and my brother's kind of taken over that aspect of the business under Murphy's Menswear now. But what that means is I basically grew up kind of at the feet of my mother's sewing machine, where like scraps of fabric were falling to the floor, and there I was with my Barbie dolls wrapping them around, turning them into something. And so I suppose leaping forward from there, that was kind of a very creative interest that was just instilled in me. And I kind of grew that then, we'll say, to go to Limerick School of Art and Design myself and study fashion. And after that, I really like literally kind of got on a plane when I had my degree and headed off to New York.
That journey obviously took you there, and I've been to New York myself, and it's a wonderful city, but it's really the place to be when it comes to fashion. Maybe outside of Paris, it's almost the hub of it, if you like. So tell me about that experience, because you were out there for a long number of years.
I suppose when I was in college, I did get a chance to visit one summer, and it kind of made me realize I was studying this area that I loved, but that there was such a big industry and big business in it. And that, you know, I just kind of saw all the job opportunity, and like that as a fashion capital, that was the place that I wanted to be. So, you know, it just kind of like it got its hooks in. That was it. I just knew like I was so passionate about what I was studying and that I really wanted to kind of propel myself into a strong career. And so it just kind of, you know, I was drawn to go back there then as soon as I graduated.
You worked with some top brands out there, of course, as well. What made you come back then? Because I guess if you're on Fifth Avenue and you're working with the likes of Victoria's Secret, it's quite a contrast to fly back into Shannon Airport and come back to Ballinacallie.
Yeah, it definitely is. I worked for a lot of big companies, like Victoria's Secret probably being one of the bigger known names here, Gap, and then some other big kind of corporate fashion brands that maybe aren't as known here. And it kind of allowed me to really understand the inner workings of fashion as a business. And it's a fast-paced, constantly working hard, long weeks, long hours. And I suppose, you know, after a while, you know, you kind of start, you know, as you get older in that, you kind of start thinking, right, you know, is this the pace of life that I want for the rest of my life? Or do I want to maybe, you know, slow things down a little bit? Which, especially as I was kind of progressing through my development as a designer and realizing how important it is that fashion slows down.
Yeah.
You know, I found myself also going, I want to slow down. And I would come home and visit family as often as I could, but it was usually like maybe once a year for around 10 days at Christmas. And I just kind of always noticed that there was that difference between the European style of, you know, how work was approached and versus how it is in America. And it's very first and foremost in, you know, there. And here, I think there's a bit more balance, although I do think things are shifting here a little bit as well. But I do think that kind of balance of business and personal life, you know, is more balanced here. And that's kind of what I wanted to come back to and kind of I gained so much and I kind of wanted to like reset my own batteries. And then, you know, kind of when I was recharged, I felt like I wanted to take what I'd learned and bring it back here to like Ireland and to Clare.
Yeah. And on that note, then tell me about a four after, because I suppose you were speaking there about long hours. And I'd imagine there's an awful lot of long hours and long work that went into setting up your own business, of course. Tell me about that, the genesis of it. And I suppose the USP of the brand, which is really going back to that sustainable fashion idea.
Yeah. So, you know, having spent 20 years working in this area and, you know, there's, I think what's at least becoming more aware now is there's quite a spotlight on how damaging the fashion industry is as a business on our environment. And so I'm still a designer at heart and I love to create and I do love a challenge as well. So it's very much harder to design sustainably. It's so much easier to just design how you want and to not put parameters on yourself. So I knew I wanted to start something up myself, but I wanted to be able to sleep at night, you know, at a time when we don't need as such to have new fashion businesses started because the amount of clothing that's being generated, I wanted to try and kind of do something better and then potentially as a model that might be followed. Sustainable fashion is something that's not regulated. And so, you know, there's a lot of kind of certain businesses kind of take advantage of that. And I wanted to do it as kind of ethically as possible. And I also kind of wanted to like try myself to iron out some of the challenges that there are to doing that and to drive it towards truly to drive it towards circular fashion, which is kind of been identified at this stage as the way that the industry needs to go if it's to kind of eliminate the harm that it causes.
No, I must say I couldn't possibly interview you without getting you to explain to me the concept of the buttons on your clothing, which are made from milk. I suppose there's no real better way to emphasize the concept of sustainable fashion than that. Tell me about it.
Yeah, so when I was looking at the materials that are needed to make the garments that I was designing, there's a lot more materials that goes into an item of clothing than the ordinary person might know, or even to the naked eye, there's kind of materials within the materials. So I searched for like what was like the best fabric that I could get, the best thread that I could get, you know, and every kind of component involved. And then myself as a designer, I love buttons as a detail and they're functional as well. They're needed. So I really kind of had a challenge in trying to find buttons that weren't just like regular plastic or regular nylon, which, you know, don't biodegrade and, you know, will sit on our planet for hundreds of years.
Yes.
So I was doing lots of research on that. And then finally, I found a company who are out of France and they work with this bioplastic material and they create buttons that look no different to any other buttons, which is great. And there's lots of variety in terms of what you can do with them and whatnot. But I met them at a trade show in Paris. And I went to them to kind of talk to them specifically about this material and these buttons they were doing. And then as soon as I opened my mouth and started talking to them, they're like, oh, you're Irish. Oh, that's interesting, because we get the milk from Ireland that, you know, okay, creates these buttons. So, you know, it was just kind of like this very like, OK, this is exactly the, you know, the trim that I'm trying to find, the material that I'm trying to find. So they work with, I don't specifically know the like dairy business that they work with, yeah, but they work with an Irish supply chain, because they said we were the only country that could give them the kind of supply chain transparency that they wanted. They were saying, you know, there are cows and there is dairy business in the continent of Europe, but we work with Ireland because that's where supply chain transparency is provided that we want. So they take what would be a byproduct in the dairy industry. So like it would be milk that's like not fit for human consumption, or I guess through some of the processing is kind of the leftover elements, because it's kind of the protein, as I understand it, of the milk is what they're able to work with. And then that's brought to their manufacturer in their production facilities in Italy. And then that's where the buttons, you know, that material, that source goods is actually turned into buttons. So it's kind of a real European Union in a button, is what I consider it. And, you know, and I just love that I can look out my window here and I see cows and I'm like, potentially you're making my buttons.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's certainly a fascinating way of looking at it. Tell me about your kind of mode of selling then, because you obviously have an online presence and I know you've had some celebrity endorsements from the likes of Eoin Garrahy, who obviously has big Clare connections as well, and Aisling B and people like that. And are you selling directly from your website? Are you wholesaling? What way are you kind of approaching the market at the moment?
Yeah, so I'm approaching the market to sell direct to the consumer. I kind of looked at some various aspects at the beginning, and it may evolve too. But right now, something that I've acknowledged is that there can be a perception that like sustainable fashion is for people who are like more privileged. And my way of at least trying to kind of open up that conversation more is if I sell direct to the consumer, then I can kind of cut out the middleman so that it makes it at least more affordable when it reaches the market. And then as well, what I'm working on introducing next year would be a resale element within my business, within my website. And that will be where customers who have previously bought from me can come back to the website and authentically sell on something that they've purchased already. And again, that will make me for after as a brand more accessible to people to kind of, you know, keep allowing for like that variety within price point.
So almost kind of a community forum type, you know, we've seen some of that kind of stuff take off on social media in terms of group pages and stuff like that, and people recycling clothing and almost doing that through your brand then.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, of course, there's lots of reselling platforms out there, whether you want to go to eBay or Depop or something, but this also gives the person like, you know, peace of mind to know that like, you know, if you buy something that's pre-loved from a for after, it's authentic.
Yeah.
You know, you're not going to like kind of get something and be surprised and be like, oh, that's not really what it looked like in the picture. So kind of facilitating that, because, you know, in practice, what that will do is open up the consumer to kind of maybe think more open-mindedly about their own clothing as well. And if they can resell something they got from us, through us, you know, maybe they might look at other things in their wardrobe and decide to resell them on their own Depop or whatever it is, because it's a lot about just, you know, trying to, we've unlearned some bad habits that we have around fashion. So, you know, anything that I feel like my business can do to kind of change customer behaviors for the better, you know, I'm interested in incorporating as much of that as I can.
Okay, really interesting. And it really seems like an area of fashion that's going to be on an upward trajectory, I would say, in the next number of years, particularly as we all get kind of a lot more eco-conscious. Thanks very much, Sandra, for joining me on Clare Means Business.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate you having me. And it was lovely to talk to you.
Great to hear from Sandra there. And best of luck to her and the Afore After brand as they continue to move forward and grow. And sustainable really is the buzzword now of the fashion sector at the moment. Now for something slightly different, though. You might be aware, as I mentioned earlier, in Budget 2022, that it's been revealed the people who work from home will be able to claim back up to 30% of their utility expenses on things like electricity bills. And we know they're going up lately, as well as things like broadband. However, a new survey undertaken by Matrix Recruitment suggests that more than half of workers now believe remote working is going to create inequality in businesses. Breda Dooley from Matrix is with me on the podcast. Thanks for joining us, Breda. Workers then seemingly divided on this issue then as we emerge from the pandemic.
Yes, it's Matrix Recruitment's fourth year running this workplace equality survey. And out of the survey this time, there was a fear about people that choose to work remotely. Will it create inequality in the workplace? The fears are around that if it's like out of sight, out of mind, they're fearful that they'll be forgotten about, you know, if they're not in the office and there's meetings happening and they're just there virtually, that they'll be forgotten about. And also the fear that their boss won't see them as committed to the work or to the employer if they're not in the office along with their other colleagues as well. And also we know that out of the survey, 47% are concerned that they'll be overlooked for promotional opportunities, along with that they won't be picked for projects because they're not in the office, or maybe their colleagues choose to go to the office. So again, it comes back to that fear of being forgotten if you choose working remotely.
And I suppose that fear is obvious then, going by the survey results. But I guess the obvious question is, what can an employer or a business do to mitigate those fears then as much as possible?
Yes, at Matrix Recruitment, we would advise employers to have clear policies, you know, whether it's you're offering fully remote, you're offering a hybrid, or back to the office. But the policies need to be clear around what is expected of an employee if they choose one of those options. Seek professional advice when you're creating these policies, because they are new, you know, and it's unknown. People need to get advice around this. Communication needs to be good here, you know, both from the employer and the employee, particularly the employer. They need to be able to communicate what is expected of an employee if they choose to fully work remotely, and have a two-way communication process here. You know, get feedback from the employer and the employee about how it's going to work. And the same way, you know, we went into the remote working, we didn't really have a choice, you know, it hit us and everybody had to choose work. You had to go remotely, let's say. But now that we're kind of returning back to the things are turning around and changing, let's say, what I'd say is that flexibility in both sides. Let the employer and the employee talk about it. See how it's working for both, you know, in 6 months' time. Is it, you know, and make sure that it is working for both the employer and the employee. And that will help and, you know, avoid any inequality in the workplace.
Is it fair to say that the mood music on the return to office has changed as restrictions have lifted? Because I guess, as you mentioned there, when we were forced into remote working when the pandemic initially hit and as we went through a number of lockdowns, I suppose the mood was essentially that this was going to become a permanent part of working life in Ireland. And we've heard, for example, here in Clare, how there are many people relocating here from Dublin that are able to work from home now, etc. Whereas as restrictions lift and as we come to the 22nd of October and as we've passed the 20th of September from that return to offices date, there almost seems to be a rush, if you like, back to those desks, whether that's being driven from an employee or an employer or even a state point of view. The mood music, as I say, really seems to have changed compared to what it was when the pandemic initially hit.
Yes, I'm hearing it from both sides, let's say, from the employer and the employee and the employee, that the employer does wants to start getting people back into the office. Now, I am kind of, some of the bigger companies, they are being cautious. They're not bringing people in back directly. They're waiting until, a lot of companies are waiting until after Christmas, you know, maybe January, February, to start introducing people coming back into the workplace again, employees. So it's some sectors want to get everybody back in. Not every sector. I would say the bigger multinationals or the bigger companies are holding back a little. They want to wait and see how we get over the next few months when everybody goes back in, and then they'll gradually bring their employees back in.
Can I ask you about another element of the survey, which is the four-day working week, which I suppose is now gaining traction and attention in the country? I know that there are a small group of Irish businesses that have signed up to a pilot four-day working week, which will be arranged in the next number of months. The majority of people, interestingly, that you surveyed are in favour of the introduction of that week. But I suppose more than half are of the view that a 5-day working week can fit into four. I suppose The obvious question then is from another element of the survey, where nearly 40% of people surveyed suggested that it might create a more pressurised environment. I suppose if you combine one element of the survey where people are maybe feeling under pressure and not in a position to be recognised for promotions and that kind of thing if they're working remotely, if you're to combine that with a four-day working week that may put even more pressure on them, it could create a seriously stressful environment for the employee who's working from home in fear of being overlooked and then has to fit all that into 4 days.
Yes, it's, listen, I think a lot has to be, planned out before this actually happened. It's not going to suit every industry or every job title or every sector. There's a lot more planning needs to be in place. What came out of the survey is that people do want this. They do want this 4 day, working week and to do 5 days. The feedback on it was that, you'd have a better work-life balance. And we're hearing a lot about health and well-being, and it can be achieved in, 5 days can be achieved in 4 days. Whereas you said, the other side is 15% are not in favor of it. It will create longer days. And it will create, probably a more pressurized environment. That was the feedback. What we, as we're saying, is it's not going to suit every sector, and it has to nearly probably be taken by a case by case situation. It's been, as we say, funded by the government to research this at the moment. A lot of, planning again needs to be, come out of this before it can be implemented. But it is gathering momentum, and it's a lot. We're hearing it a lot now from candidates asking questions about, is there a possibility of 4 days? So it's definitely something that we'll be hearing a lot about in the future.
Is there a potential for a skills imbalance to be created there? Because we've heard from a number of hospitality businesses, and that's just one sector where there's the example as we emerge from the pandemic, that they're finding it very difficult to recruit staff. And one of the reasons, among others, they're suggesting is that work-life balance factor, and the fact that hospitality by its very nature is particularly busy on weekends and things like that. Whereas if certain industries and sectors, as you mentioned there, can find it that bit easier to transform themselves into a 4 day working week, well then you would imagine that those, whether it be those filling out their CEO forms or looking to upskill, are going to maybe disproportionately head towards and be attracted towards those sectors where you can enter a 4 day working week, say Monday to Thursday, compared to a sector like hospitality, where it might go over 7 days, or construction, or one of those sectors where maybe that 4 day working week just isn't possible.
Yeah. And I suppose this is where we need to do a lot more research. As I said, it's not going to suit every industry. And this would be down to maybe the government getting involved in here and seeing, is it feasible, and to make it more attractive to people to work in the hospitality and the tourism, because I know they are suffering trying to attract staff into this area. So it would be down to the government to work with these sectors and how to to build on that and make these sectors a lot more attractive.
Can I ask you lastly, Breda, just in terms of general recruitment and trends that you're seeing in the job market? I would have spoke to a number of recruiters over the past few months on the programme, and it's interesting seeing some of the changes in demand of different sectors as we emerge from the pandemic. What are, some of the main markets where roles are emerging now in the last few weeks and months? We've heard during the pandemic that things like the pharmaceuticals sector, for example, have seen large trends and large openings. Is that still the case? Are there other sectors now maybe seeing a bit more of a bounce back and seeing roles emerge?
Yes, it's right across all sectors. We're seeing a significant increase in jobs. I would definitely say yes, you have your pharmaceutical, you have your medical device, but food, that has, there's even, speaking to companies, they're actually ramping up production, and they're even adding new lines as well. It's not just one, any particular sector. We're seeing it right across all, from your services to your professional offices to again to your manufacturing companies as well. So there is plenty of job opportunities out there at present.
Okay, I'll leave it there, Breda, if you don't mind. Thanks very much for joining us on Clare Means Business.
Thank you very much, Josh.
Breda Dooley there from Matrix Recruitment. And again, an interesting one to keep an eye on. What's going to become the norm in the business world? Is it going to be remote working fully? Is it going to be a more blended model? And will that four-day working week come to pass across different industries going forward? Well, that's all we've got time for, unfortunately, on this week's episode of Clare Means Business. Thanks very much, as always, for lending your ear to us for the last 20 minutes or so. In the meantime, stay safe, and we'll talk again in 7 days' time.
You've been listening to an exclusive Clare FM podcast presented by Josh Prendeville. Log on each week to hear Clare Means Business.